arm, you know? I said, yeah, but the heat has got to get to all these other rooms. Well, the walls were like, you could probably lit a cigarette off of them, you know? But when you're compulsive and obsessive, that's not enough. It's just not enough for me. Well, I had a good time. Got to meet some great wood guys, you know, and it was a great feeling. It was a great feeling. Building a fire in the cave, I think differently. I see things differently. I remember when that would have been a chore I would have been very unhappy with. I can remember at that time I would have been unhappy with it. I would have let that fire go out on a lot of occasions. Because it wasn't important to me. I was more important to me. I have a friend who put me on the floor one time. We were in a meeting and he said, you know, I may not be much, but I'm all I ever think about. I thought, oh, great that is, yeah. And that used to be all I was capable of thinking about. And I think about other people because I've done the work necessary to do to change the belief system. I don't believe what I used to believe. I used to accept people's opinion just because they were well-dressed. Sounded right to me. And they look, you know, emotionally healthier than I feel. So they must be right. The guy may just have been released from the local state mental institution. I don't know. And I'm about to make this statement he said as an absolute fact on which I'm going to maybe even change part of my life. I'm going to get into debates over this issue, holding his side that I know nothing about. That's never kept me from getting in debates, ever. The knowledge of the subject. You know, what do you want to talk about? Nuclear energy? All right, man, let me tell you about the plants down in San Antonio. You know, God, when you're pretending to be okay, it's just murderous. High tension and the risk of being found out. It's just terrible. Where was I going with all that? Oh, okay. Why on God? Well, this, like, you know, it's like, you should catch me when I'm not focused. When I'm just wandering around the house, you know, writing something, and I get up from my computer, you should see what it takes me to get back to my computer. God, I, you know, put the dishes in the dishwasher and straighten this and watch TV. I mean, it's an hour before I get back to the computer. I can't get up from the computer sometimes. I have to just stay there and not move. Anyway. Why on God's earth would anybody ever listen to an opinion out of the mouth of somebody they don't know and incorporate it as part of their belief system? Because I grew up in a house in which there was only one opinion. I never had heard, lived with, or gotten the concept that you and I could have differing opinions and neither one of us has to be wrong. I mean, that was like heresy to me. In my house, the largest person home at the time held the only opinion that mattered. I'm telling you the truth. That's the truth. That's how I grew up. And school was that way for me in those days. The teacher was the biggest person in the room, and her opinion is the only one that counted. You weren't encouraged in those school in those days for free thinking. Maybe you'd be in the vice principal's office for free thinking. And they wanted obedience. That's very important. Obedience. They don't know how to let the children be free. In a school, you know, you get kids. Healthy children, emotionally healthy children, are often a problem in school. The reason is because they want to explore. They have an almost insatiable curiosity, and they have a mind that thinks different methods of a way to do something. An example would be a teacher who's got all the kids lined up by twos, and they're going to march across the schoolyard, 10 of them, to the doors, the double doors over there, and then they're going to go into the cafeteria. And little Carolyn is standing there, and she's being raised by loving, nurturing parents who have a lot of information on how to raise a child. And she said, how about we just, that's a 100-yard field out there, right? How about each one of us just takes our own 10 yards and kind of wanders and we meet at the doors over there? And the teacher will tell her, no, that's not okay. And she doesn't even know why it's not okay. She's been taught, you put them in a line. You march them in a line. You make them obedient. You see? That just doesn't work. You raise a kid who's healthy, you know. An example would be our daughter. In first grade, she was having some problems. This angel of ours. Biggest one was she wouldn't finish her work on time and she wouldn't finish her art on time. So we get a call from the teacher and we go in and we talk to the teacher and we say, okay, let's just not, you know, worry about it. We'll watch it for a while. And a couple of days later, they had an art project in school where you take one of these styrofoam eggs and you get these little sequins and straight pins and you pin the sequins on the egg. All the kids in the class have got sequins pinned all over their eggs and, you know, there's gaps, large gaps of styrofoam and stuff, or they made whatever design they wanted. Everybody's done but our daughter, who has only the top of the egg done. So Tina's going into town that afternoon, and she gets an idea. My ex-wife's an artist and a writer. She's a very right brain, really right brain. She goes in a store. She gets all different colored sequins. She gets a box of straight pins. She gets a big box lid. Alexander's in the back seat of the car. She gives her the box lid, the sequins, and the pins, and she just leaves her alone while she runs errands. On the way home, after a couple of hours of errands or whatever, Alexander says, here, Mom, and she hands her this Fabergé egg. It is completely covered with sequins. No styrofoam shows through anywhere. Some of the colors are in ribbons, match, you know, gold and then red and then whatever. And Tina and I looked at that and said, look at that piece of work. So we went back to the teacher and we said, here's the deal. We will work hard with her to help her finish her academic studies on time in class. You will allow her to finish her art projects at her pace. And the teacher being hip said, that's cool. You know, I'll go for that. I'll go for that. Tina was telling me my daughter just spent the summer with me. And Tina was telling me just before summer vacation started, two or three days before, they called her from the school she goes to. I said, your daughter was caught today French kissing a boy in the schoolyard. She's 7. No, she's 10. Tina said, well, thank God it was a boy. And the woman said, that's all? Tina says, yeah, that's it. No conversation needs to be had here. That was it. The woman was in shock. It's not a big deal. I don't care. I'm glad it was a boy. She said all she had to say in the first sentence. And you adore her for that stuff. She just doesn't care. Thank God it was a boy. See you. Not a big deal. Let's not get nuts over stuff that doesn't matter. You know? Do you get nuts over stuff that doesn't matter? I do. I can be completely berserk over things I have no control over that's going to come out exactly like I know it's going to come out, and I'm still crazy. You ever fly Southwest? Do you ever want to get in that first 30? Get there 2 hours early with a lunch? Stand in line to get your boarding pass to get on? Get really hyper because I'm like number 111? And I got to work my way close to the door to see if I can't be the first of the 110s that are in the plane. I'm getting on a goddamn plane and I'm getting a seat. Who cares? Who cares if it's in between two people? Who cares? The plane is not going without me. And I can get berserk. I mean, just really tense. In fact, I used to, you know, like, help move people in front of me, you know. Put an elbow out, somebody trying to go by, you know. Real social person, you know. Guy would be getting on the plane with his ribs, like, you know. Supermarket. Well, we'll take a minute of this and we'll give it up. Basically, many of us who are from dysfunctional systems are what's called task-oriented. Task-oriented is you feel like you have worth and value as a human being when you're doing something. You feel even more valuable when you put a time limit on the chore and you complete it within the frame of the time limit you have put on the chore. I wonder if any of you can yet hear the madness here, okay? An example is this. I go to look in my refrigerator at home, I open it up, there's no Diet Coke. I think, oh my God. So I close the refrigerator. Well, I'll go to the market and I'll get some Diet Coke. Now so far, this is emotionally healthy. This is mental health. I have identified the need, and I have identified the solution to the need. I'm running good here. I'm all right so far. Need Diet Coke? Going to market. We're cool. Then I look at my watch, and I say, I got to be back by 3. I've got nothing to do for the next 6 hours, right? But I need to be back from the store at 3 to have any value as a human being. Now I have set myself up to speed going to the market, which could cost me who knows how much money, park illegally in the parking lot at the supermarket, go get my Diet Coke, find myself in the 10 items or less line behind Gertie with 17 items in her checkbook out. I want to kill her because she's going to keep me from getting home at, you know, 3. I mean, actually, if I time it right, I can get out before her because she's going to move slow and run her down with my car. This is after I've already said a couple of unkind things about, you know, do you need glasses to read the sign? Also, I can have value as a human being. Task orientation. If I'm busy, I have value. I don't know how to just go lay on the grass in the park and do nothing but look at the clouds for 15 minutes. I used to get so nervous I would want to jump out of my skin. Because laying there on the grass in the park looking at the clouds, I have no value to my way of thinking. And that's tragic. That's really tragic. I am not what I drive. I am not what I wear. I am not what I do. I am not where I live. I am not the amount of money I make. I am the man who lives inside. That's who I am. And you can't get to know him in 10 minutes or an hour. You know, you're going to have to take time and spend time with him, like I will have to you to get to know you. None of this can be done in an instant observation. If you're like I am immediately judgmental. Immediately. I look at a guy and decide who he is, what he does, he's a child beater. You know, I mean, I work it all out. In a matter of minutes, I work it all out. You want to feel better about yourself? Just beginning little steps. Do something you would respect somebody else for doing. It's as simple as if you saw a woman drop her bag of groceries and somebody ran over and helped her pick them up, put them back in the bag and handed it to her. If you respected that person for doing that, then it tends to follow that the next time you see a woman drop a bag of groceries, you run over and you help her pick them up. And you will feel good about you. And we have to get past the public embarrassment of helping someone else. A lot of us have to get past the public embarrassment of drawing attention to ourselves by helping the other person. I mean, it's tough. It's hard. A woman asked me to tell one last little story, so I guess I will, because it's along those lines of helping people. I get on this airplane, I don't even know, I was flying to Albuquerque. And this little boy is on, I'm put next to this little boy. I think he had a stuffed animal. I don't remember now. I haven't told the story in years. We start talking on the plane. I'm great with kids. Kids love me. Kids, you know, they look in my eyes and they see somebody home. That's all they want. You know, watch where children look, even little ones. Even little ones. The first place they look is in your eyes to see if someone is home. If no one is home, then they'll go for the earrings or the mustache or the beard or the glasses, something to entertain themselves with. If someone is home, they will continue to look at you in your eyes. So I just, you know, I love kids. Man, we just look at each other. This little guy and I looked at each other for a while. I think I asked him about his bear. I don't remember. And we started talking. And what I found out was he was being battered at home. And he was afraid about going home to Atlanta or wherever it was he was going home to. But he was gone and his dad was going to pick him up and his dad was the child batterer. Now I get off this plane in Albuquerque and he goes on. Maybe it was to Oklahoma, I don't remember. And I go to the airport police and I try and get them to help. And I said, there's nothing they can do. I can't remember what it was. They said, I don't really remember much of this now. I try and put things behind me and do something new so I don't live on what I did 10 years ago, you know. And then I went, I think, to the Albuquerque police, saying, you got to call ahead and inform them that this child is being beaten and, you know, somebody's got to help them out. And they, whatever it was, out of their jurisdiction. Yadda, 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 yadda. So finally I called the police in whatever town he was in Oklahoma or wherever it was, and I told him the situation, told him what plane he was on and that he was being beaten and somebody needed to help this boy out. And they said they would have officers meet the plane and meet the boy, and they would take it from there and thank me for calling. See, I know about being a beaten child. I know. And I could not let him go without doing something. I would have had to just lay down in front of a jet plane that's taken off, and I would not have been able to live with myself had I let him go home and never say anything. It's not okay anymore. Now, I don't know whether they showed up. I don't know whether they arrested his dad. I don't know whether he helped him. I don't know if they just told me that to pacify me and get me off the phone and didn't really care. But you see, that's not my end of the situation. My end was take it as far as I could take it, and I did. The outcome is not my business. It's just not. Let me tell you, that's far different from I used to be. I can remember when I'd had to get the kid's address. I'd had to fly to his goddamn hometown. I'd have to go have a talk with his old man. I have a good friend working ACA with me in the beginning. He dropped the guy. This dad slapped his boy in the back of the head, and then Larry dropped him, I mean, like a sack of rocks on the floor. He hit him so hard, the guy's whole body just left the ground. And he says, I don't think you'll do that to the kid anymore. And he's like in his face screaming at him. The guy's not, you know, like barely conscious. I said, Larry, we need to talk about how we approach these situations in markets, because we're going to run into a lot of this with parents and children, and there are better ways to go about it than punching the guy's lights out, you know. I don't think it's going to help. So what I'm trying to say tonight is, if you identify with any of this, the problems, there are solutions to all of them. To all of them. I know people who have been so severely abused, their lives make mine sound like a walk in the park. A walk in the park. And I got to tell you, their lives are so cool today. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch. You can be a good parent. You can be a good grandma. You can be a good husband, a good brother, good, you know, neighbor. If you can get past your belief system. Mine tells me if I open myself up to you, you will take advantage of me. The phrase I hated most in the early days of sobriety, and I mean the first few years, was I love you. Why would I hate a phrase like that? Because from the time I can remember until I got into the program of recovery, I had never, ever in my life said I love you to somebody I didn't want something from. Whether it was a smile or sex or money or peace, stop being mad, you know, whatever it was, I wanted something. So it was inconceivable to me that any of these people in recovery saying to me, I love you, meant it. I wanted to know what you want. What do you want? What a hell of a way to live. Belief system. Learned behavior. I am not responsible, but none of it gets fixed without me. I have always loved that. I'm not responsible for the problem. It's my solution to fix it. My problem, you know, that's it. It's my responsibility to find the solution. That's a gift. To me, that's a gift, considering what I was buried under when I believed that I as a human being had no value, when I was ashamed of who I thought I was. I'll take that one anytime. Solution's mine? All right, let's go. Let's go. Show me, you know. Let's get in here and do it. You've been a great audience. I've had a lot of fun. I hope I see a lot of you at the workshop tomorrow. Thanks, and God bless.